Welcome to a special episode of the Front Row Network. I'm Jay Hoffman, and joining me today is the Front Row Network's Vanessa Ferguson. How's it going?
Hi, Jay. I'm doing great. How are you?
Living the dream, just like everybody else during the old COVID-19.
I know, right? But at least we get to talk to Leslie today, so I'm really excited about that.
I'm very, very excited. It's been a great day. I did some work, I did a hike, and now I'm going to talk to an Oscar-nominated director. What is this life?
What is life?
What a cool day. So those of you out there, today we're interviewing filmmaker Leslie Iwerks about her new documentary,
Selling Lies.
Leslie Iwerks is an Oscar and Emmy-nominated documentary director and producer. Many of her films shed light on global issues, while others provide a behind-the-scenes look at the entertainment industry. She has directed the Academy Award-nominated documentary Recycled Life, as well as The Pixar Story, The Imagineering Story, and Pipe Dreams, to name a few. Her new documentary, Selling Lies, examines the fake news industry ran by teenagers in North Macedonia that inevitably influenced the 2016 American election. The film is winning Best Short Film Documentary in numerous film festivals, and today we're going to talk to her about it. So let's get right to it. Here's our interview with Leslie Iwerks.
Hello.
Hi, Leslie.
Hi. How are you?
Hi.
Good. Hi. How you doing?
We're doing great. Well, welcome to the podcast, Leslie. We're so excited to have you back to the Front Row Network and to talk about your new documentary, Selling Lies. I was especially interested not only as someone who's worked in journalism, but also as someone who has been to Macedonia. So I'll just jump right in with my first question. I remember when the story first broke about fake news coming from a small town in what's now known as North Macedonia. What about this story led you to make a film about it? Was there something in particular that drew you to the subject?
Yes. So I, I'm always reading different stories and articles and always looking for interesting subjects. And one day, this inadvertently, I woke up on a Sunday and I was reading Wired magazine. And the front page was about these teenagers who were making a lot of money through Facebook, creating fake news. And it was interesting to me, I think, because it was a blend of, a town that was not making a lot of money. You know, the industry had kind of bottomed out there. And so there were a lot of kids graduating from different schools, and it was a highly technical city, you know, with a lot of kids graduating in IT and whatnot. They had a lot of kids in that realm who were looking for work and in a city that didn't have a lot of jobs, right? And then with this idea that you could create clickbait news and then find ways to aggregate it and share it at high volumes with each other and across multiple parties and do sharing in groups. And there was just a massive amount of ways in which you could share this material. And so they started finding the fissures within Facebook and cracking the code that allowed them to create clickbait that would then create, you know, allow them to get ads. And then those ads brought in revenue, and it became this cycle that grew and grew and grew. It was like a big balloon that just grew. And all of a sudden, you know, American readers were reading it and they were believing all this stuff. And I think these kids were having a great time just laughing at the American public who were reading the most inane headlines that no one in their right mind would believe. But clearly there's enough Americans that believe all this stuff. And so they're just over there laughing at it and making, you know, some kids are apparently making like $100,000 a month, right?
Right.
And that's huge. Even $30,000, $20,000 a month was so much money for these kids. So I, to answer your question, saw this article and I thought this could be an interesting story. It's a mashup of a lot of different subjects. It's also about an entrepreneurial mindset, you know?
Right.
What you use with your skills, whether it be right or wrong. And So I wanted to explore that the morality issue here of what you do to make money, whether it's right or whether it's wrong, and who felt that what they were doing because they were making money was right versus they felt remorse about it. And then I wanted to really get into what was the impact of this and how much of an impact was this? Was there really a story there? And so, cause I heard every spectrum, every side to the story that they made no impact to, they made a huge impact to Hillary Clinton mentioning it after the fact that after she lost the election and really. So I decided, I talked to my DP, my cameraman, Suki Medenchevic, and who's from Bosnia. And I said, I really would love to do this story. And, you know, what do you think? And he said, well, I'm going to be in Bosnia over the summer with my family. And if you want, Macedonia is not far. I could meet you there. So we did. So I started, you know, working with our line producer, Samir, who's in Macedonia, and he set up a bunch of interviews. And, you know, we really did go there. I literally, like, you know, bought a ticket and planned to go, and I flew out there on my own. And it was just, you know, those are the kinds of subjects I love, because I love going on adventures and trying to figure out what the story is before I get there. I mean, even while I'm there, I don't know what it is. It's a blank slate. And so it's like this open book of, okay, I'm going to write the story as it unfolds. So I landed, and it was probably, I don't know, a month and a half after I read this article, we pulled it together, and I got there and was there for 10 days, just, you know, meeting all sorts of people and having coffee and really trying to gain the trust of folks who, at this point, the story was kind of old. The journalists had already come and gone, and they had already told the story in the press, and I was there, and they're like, why are you here? You know, the journalists have already come. And right. I said, well, I'd like to actually know more. I'd like to dig a little deeper. Yeah. And so that's kind of what we did. And I spent a lot of time with these people, and I really did, you know, talk to them and go deeper, a deeper layer than what everyone else had done. And so I really wanted to understand sort of the human story behind this story.
Right, exactly. And I really appreciated too seeing your footage as you're going through what looked like the downtown area of Skopje. And I'm like, wow, she's there. She's really there. So I wanted to ask you kind of about that behind the scenes of making the film. You know, how much research went into the film? You talked about meeting with Macedonians in the country. Could you talk a little more about that and how long you were there for filming?
So I was there for 10 days, and then we also came back, and we also partnered with Morgan Freeman's company, and they got wind of the project through Suki, and they were really interested in getting involved, and they came in towards the editing side and really helped as well to help me shape it a little bit. And we came upon the name of Trace Arsov, who we realized was one of the leading fake news writers in the country, and he's an attorney, defamation mm-hmm. attorney, and so he just felt that he had a voice and a way in which to help steer our election in America, and felt very strong that Trump should win. I think originally he was a Rand Paul fan, and the election didn't go that direction. He's more, I think, in the middle, but I was really intrigued that why in the world did this guy care about our election to the point where he was putting all this money into Facebook and all this time and building a network of quote journalists, as he called them, but they were writers in the US that he solicited to write fake articles for mm-hmm. for his sites. And by the way, that's happening today in a big way. And it's grown and grown and grown since 2016. And this was, I almost look back on this time as sort of the first US election to get really hacked by the layman and from foreign countries, you know, teenagers and high school graduates and college graduates who can actually make a difference. You know, the difference is really a question of how much of a difference it really made. But the fact is, more importantly, is that Facebook was not set up yet to deal with this. And right. they are such a powerful platform, and they are not handling the trouble that's coming through that platform in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion, enough. And so we discovered, you know, this Trace Arsov and BuzzFeed, again, you know, were really brilliant in finding and you know, researching this whole story. And we contacted Trache, and he was very much kind of a nefarious figure. You know, he wasn't one to really answer your emails or your calls. And he had, I think, done an interview with BuzzFeed or one of the networks, but only on voice, but he would never go on camera. And so I talked to him on Skype for 2-3 hour interviews, and we really got to know each other. And I really wanted to understand what it was that he was doing and why he was doing it. And to his, you know, credit, for whatever credit that is, his opinion was he was not a fake news writer. He was biased. He was just putting out biased content. Mm-hmm. But that's not what BuzzFeed and that's not what Media Matters found. They found that he would literally take hoaxes and reprint them. And so it was fascinating for me to see and to hear the point of view of Trache, who, by the way, had the most followers in his country. He had most followers on social media than all of his country's media combined, traditional media combined, mm-hmm. something like 2 million followers. So Trache had more followers, you know, on his Facebook page than all the media combined in his country. And so it was, from a business standpoint, you know, he was feeding the beast, you know, and it was something that was really interesting to me. And at the same time, I totally disagreed with everything he was telling me, right? So as a filmmaker, I have to really be as objective as I can and still try to tell the story of Trache, tell the story of the government, tell the story of the IT guy who set these people up. So you got these teenagers, you got Trache, you got Trache hiring Americans. So all these people are kind of working the system in this country. Whether or not they were involved with the Russians, I'd still love to know that to this day. I wouldn't doubt it, but I think that the fact that this made such an impact, it was an interesting story. And that was the fun part of it for me, was to go there, to talk to everybody, but then to come back and then find my own voice in it and what I was trying to have the audience come away with, which was an objective look at what is right and what is wrong.
I think you succeeded, because I felt I had a bunch of questions, and I think you did a very good job of that. But I want to riff off something you said. You know, fake news has become an everyday part of our modern lexicon over the last 4 years, really. And Selling Lies opens and it states, "This is one story." Have you had any thoughts about diving further into the world of fake news beyond just this one story? You know, the idea of maybe a docu-series. I mean, you just said you're interested with the Russian connection. So would there be future work in it for you?
You know, I think there's always going to be interesting possibilities to spin this off. There's a lot of great documentary filmmakers right now that are doing really good work in this space. And I'm talking to a number of folks about maybe doing the next iteration of this. You know, it's tricky. You know, I'd like to do it. I juggle all sorts of subjects as a filmmaker, and I'm juggling a lot of subjects right now that I'm having to put my energy towards. And so, you know, not every project in my mind needs me to go to the next level and tackle it. But I do know that there are stories right now that need to be told. And I'm just, you know, I'm here to help any filmmaker or any fellow journalist to continue to share this, you know?
Yeah. I think I asked too, for me, cause I was so like, I want to hear the other stories too. I found myself really sucked in, and it was a lot of, you know, it's a lot in 30 minutes, but you do a really good job of making it digestible. And I asked more for me. I think I wanted to hear more of those stories. So I hope some of those documentaries the people you were talking to come to fruition.
Well, I was just going to say, where my heart lies is with the journalists who are out there trying to tell the truth and whose voices are getting buried by the fake news. And And I just feel so that social media is such a monster right now, and the genie's out of the bottle, and how do we can't put it back in. So how do we tame this beast so that it does not really ruin our democracy, you know? And when we have a, you know, I hate to say it, an administration and a president who's tweeting out lies, straight out lies all the time, I have a, you know, for his own good. I mean, it's my concern is that this is exactly what Macedonia did. Macedonia had this right wing, you know, government. And as the minister in our film speaks of, he says, you know, the kids now growing up grew up in an era of fake news. The administration was a propaganda administration. They spun propaganda in their favor all the time. They attacked the opposing party, the opposite party, and they became such a polarizing nation. Literally, there was a fist fight on the floor of their Congress, and people got hurt. People were taken to the hospital. And you know, when it becomes that bad, when these two polarizing parties become so vengeful towards each other, it's just we're only spiraling downward. And we have to get back to this unifying country, the United States of America, not the dividing states of America. And you know, it's just fascinating, even having since made this film, hearing the reactions that people don't even want to believe the film. Mm-hmm. They don't even want to believe Trache. They don't even want to believe what people are saying. It's like, well, when do you know then there's truth if you can't believe that people are saying what they're saying, and the filmmakers being as objective as possible to say, do you agree with them or do you disagree, right? So I'm just concerned that this is a kind of hint at what our country could become if we continue to have, if we don't continue to put guardrails on the social media world and find ways to put a concrete base under all these fissures that all these people are getting into and creating this whole subterranean dark world, you know?
Yeah, it definitely seems we've created an unhealthy level. There's healthy skepticism and unhealthy skepticism, and we've definitely hit the point where we're unhealthy. It's not, don't believe anything, but it definitely seems like there's people who recognize that and took advantage of it with this fake news system, this scam, whatever we want to call it. But absolutely, some of the folks in there, I felt like I understood why they'd want to do it. Hey, we're not making a lot of money. This makes a lot of money. Right. It's easy. But at some point, did it ever feel like when they started talking about these incredible sums of money that these people were being made, that it stopped feeling like people trying to survive and felt more like, you know, fake news drug cartel?
Well, it's an interesting way of putting it. I do think it's a big business, and I think there's a ton of people that were getting you know, kind of famous for it back in 2016 and had no qualms about announcing that they did this, including you know, Paris Wade in Arizona who was working for Trache and then ended up, you know, having his own business with his brother, and you know, then ended up running for, you know, state government, and he didn't win. But, you know, the fact that he had no problem being a fake news writer and was running on that platform, you know, that they were the champions of the truth in their mind. Mm-hmm. And look, I need to say that, you know, fake news comes from both sides. You know, it just so happened that in this way, that because Trump is so polarizing and such a clickbait grabber, and he knows it, and he's feeding that cycle. He's feeding the cycle of just being crazy and being a reality show president, that if whatever he can do to create the media to give him attention, then it's that's the only way he can get it away from other people, right? And so, you know, whether it's right or wrong, and I think that in political elections, there's lots of misinformation that is being thrown at each side, and then people hear it, they spin it, they share it with their friends, they post it on Facebook, and you throw into the mix, you know, just all these fake articles that just confuse everything and create, you know, confusion, information confusion. It just becomes this big, you know, and I just feel like I can't even look at social media very often anymore. I just, you know, I have my sites and whatnot, but I can't participate. It's just become so toxic. But what we are trying to do out of all this is to just have people try to, you know, try to be more discerning about what they read and try to educate people. And what's the good news out of all of this is that more companies, private commercial companies, are creating technology that is trying to stop the misinformation and trying to put you know, walls up against it and trying to flag it. And I think Facebook's done a lot since 2016. They haven't done enough by any means. And I think they're trying, but I don't necessarily know if, you know, by any means they're doing enough. And that's been a big problem. I do think that people just need to really learn and, you know, learn about what they read and figure out if it is a fake news article or not, and how much of it is biased. It just takes more work on our end. But fortunately, mm-hmm. as I said, these private institutions are creating technologies that students are learning of how to flag fake news, you know, and there's classes going on about it. And so at least, you know, there's an effort to try to educate the younger generation.
Yeah. One follow-up on that I have too, with the bearing responsibility, you know, the social media bearing their end of the responsibility, but also us as the readers of news, as the producers of news. But one thing that kind of popped into my head when I was watching it talked about the teenagers. You know, it was heavy on teenagers were doing a lot of this work. And I didn't know, did it seem like teenagers were being targeted for this type of work, or were teenagers seemingly drawn to the idea of fast, easy money, you know, a combination of the two? Just because seemingly a teenager wouldn't necessarily have the mental capacity to realize the disastrous effects of this. They're just seeing.
Yeah. Or were they maybe also wanting to get maybe on in that Western narrative of we influence the West, you know, because they're very part of the East and what was former Yugoslavia. You know, what are the motivations do you think that they had?
I think that they were trying to make money, and I don't think that they really cared who was going to win the election or, you know, or not. It was a quick way to make money. And as you saw with in the film, Mirko's wife, who had created this fake news story about toothpaste.
Yeah.
You know, the little square that's on the back of your bottom of your toothpaste tube is either black or green or red or blue. And she came up with a headline that was, you know, beware, or, you know, shocking, this color on your toothpaste, it will determine whether you're healthier or not. And, you know, black was toxic, so you're actually brushing your teeth with toxic chemicals, or red was partially toxic, and green was healthy and fine, and blue was, you know, whatever, suspect. Anyway, I mean, you have to give her credit. It was a creative headline, and it got so many clicks, and she made $100,000 on that one headline. So, you know, why wouldn't you go into this crazy business? And if you don't have the morals, you know, to guide you that this is not cool to be spreading fake news, especially health fake news, you know, the world is your oyster, right? As long as you can get away with it. And so that was, again, that was my reasoning. I had one side of my head in that space, like, I kind of was like, wow, that's pretty interesting that you can do this, you know, like any entrepreneur, right? But then I was thinking, how could Facebook let this happen? Mm-hmm. How could a major company like Facebook actually let this happen? And that was really, you know, the great disappointment. And then the other side of it was the moral side of like, don't you have any couth or any morality that you're going to infect people? And where do you stop? This is just toothpaste. So why don't you start making up stuff about, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. So anyway, I don't know if that answered your question, but
it was pretty good.
Some semblance, something in there maybe answered it.
Perfect. Now, we did want to ask you also about, we noticed you had an anonymous speaker in the film. Did you find it difficult to find people wanted to talk about the fake news industry and their role in it? Or did you receive any pushback or resistance? You know, I don't want to be in this. How difficult was it to find your subjects of the film?
Well, it was definitely difficult because a lot of these, you know, the bubble had burst, or I say that, you know, that balloon had popped when, right, you know, the media came down and the government was starting to crack down on these people. Although the mayor of Veles, he was very proud of these kids. He thought they created a great industry and they brought a lot of money to the city, and they were poor families that needed money. So he had no problem with it whatsoever. He actually thought they were really ingenious. So that was, and he was, you know, a big Trump supporter. So he was fine with creating whatever fake news, you know, was needed to elect Trump. So, you know, again, like, okay, if Hillary had won, he would have been upset, but it, because Trump had won, he was fine with it. I think that the idea that you can make, like I said, you can make a lot of money in this world, and not have any guilt was, I think, the driving factor, and just something that, you know, from what I understand, there's less of that happening right now because of Facebook, you know, cracking down, and Twitter cracking down on hate speech and fake news and things like that. But I do know that there are other things happening, obviously in Russia and different countries, and also in Macedonia. So there's probably a part two to this story that, you know, as I said, maybe we'll do, maybe we won't, but we'll be hearing about it, I'm sure, after the election.
Right. There's so much we'll be finding out after the election. Jay, did you have a question?
Yeah. At one point in the film, you know, we hear you say, wow, when somebody said something to you. Was there anything in the process of talking to people and learning about this story that truly shocked you, or shocked you more than you, surprised you, that you didn't know was happening in this fake news system?
You know, so much of what I just talked about, you know, that, like, again, that Trache had the more, you know, followers on his Facebook than all of the media combined. And that's when I went, wow. And he was very proud of himself, as you'll see in the film. You know, in a sense, I was like, that's impressive, right? And that takes a lot of work to build that. And he put all his money, that revenue that he made, according to him, through Facebook, back into Facebook. And so when Facebook pulled the plug, he never got all that money. And he never got the revenue. And a lot of people were like that. But a lot of people made out well, and then they started new businesses. You know, there's some fake news writers that started a bar in town, and apparently a lot of the fake news writers would sort of congregate at this one bar, you know, nightclub, and talk and share stories. And, you know, it was an interesting world. And I think, you know, I just, again, learned a lot about that country, and I learned a lot about where the country has come from, what they've been through, and then where they're headed. And I think I really just saw this mirror of what we could be. And I think that minister of technology who I interviewed was just, you know, very insightful in basically saying, you better be aware of this. We've been through it. You're not far off.
Right. Right. Yeah, and that's actually something I wanted to ask about. And my next question is kind of the takeaway of the film. Obviously, looking to what others have done and how that could influence our future is a takeaway from the film. But you know, someone, Trache is a character that I would find myself getting a little frustrated by, because he'd say it's you know, this is all true, it's quality journalism, but then it's bias. And then those two things really don't coexist in journalism school. So my biggest takeaway as someone who's worked in journalism is that the people don't necessarily understand the training that goes into being a fair and unbiased reporter. But that's my own personal takeaway. what responsibility do you think audiences have in deciphering news, and what do you want them to take away from the film?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, obviously, every journalist studies integrity in journalism, and that's, you know, yet we're riding on this sort of freedom of speech wave that a lot of people are kind of hiding under this blanket called freedom of speech, and that we can get away with, you know, all this negative commentary because even if it's fake. And that's the problem. And all of a sudden social media becomes this breeding ground for fake news, but yet it's freedom of speech. And so that becomes a polarizing discussion in Congress, in all sorts of circles, about where is the dividing line between free speech and integrity in journalism and telling the truth. And then when you have, you know, a president who says all, you know, the media is the enemy, enemy of the people, well, that then makes, you know, the general public distrust the media even more. So the media, who I feel the most sorry for out of all of this, are the journalists, the hardworking journalists who are trying to bring truth to the American public, who are trying to see both sides, who are trying to get you, the audience member, to trust what you're reading. But, you know, you could look at CNN, you can look at Fox, you can look at all these different ones. There's different variations of truth in these biased news stations, right? And I think a lot of people miss sort of the old days where we just had, you know, plain three stations, you know, right. Now it's just so polarizing, and not only 24-hour news cycle, but with the gazillion streaming networks and cable stations, but also now social media networks and channels and everyone's Facebook pages. And, you know, it's a barrage of information that where do you even know? How do you know to trust? What do you trust anymore? And so that was kind of what I wanted people to take away from, which was, you know, just be discerning about what you're reading and really, just really be responsible. It's our responsibility now to, I almost feel like if I shared something that was blatantly fake news, I'd be so embarrassed, you know, because it's not, I'm not showing intelligence by doing that. And then if you do that, which we all can inadvertently do at any point, because we don't always know that some part of that could have been fake. So it's tricky. And that's the thing now. And the other tricky part of all this is that, you know, the deep fakes and the AI and the digital technology that's getting created now to literally create fake editors in journalism, mm-hmm. you know, which Russia just was caught for doing, the agency there in Russia, for creating, you know, these fake sites that were soliciting American writers, out of work writers, liberal writers, to write stories for the liberal media. And, you know, they found out that these were completely made up editors. And, you know, these people did not even exist, yet they had an entire profile online and backgrounds and quotes and everything. So this is becoming something that is almost, you know, unbearable as far as how do we even know what's real and what's not anymore as far as people. And pretty soon we may be going, are you, you know, I could be looking at you, Vanessa, going, are you real or are you not? You know,
right.
Are you digitally created right now? But
yeah.
So, I mean, these are all the things that I think a lot of people don't quite realize. And I think the more we can become educated to what is happening, the better off we'll be. And I'm not necessarily saying I know the answer to all this stuff, except that I just feel like if we could go back in time and be an era where we were a tad less polarized and at least able to hear each other's side and try to really understand it. We may disagree with it, but let's try to understand where everyone's coming from, and let's try to find the truth amidst all the angst, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Jade, did you have anything else that you wanted to ask before I go to my final question?
No, I just okay. thanks for letting me hear your input on the documentary, because it was a very powerful documentary, and I appreciated hearing your thoughts a little more, even more in depth on it. So thank you. But I'll pass it back to you.
Thank you. Absolutely. You know, when we interviewed you a few months ago, you had mentioned that this film might be coming out this fall before the election. And I've been on pins and needles waiting to watch it. And I'm so glad I got to watch the film. It's a great insight into not only the fake news industry, but a little slice of Macedonia and what happened there. Like I said, I remember when the story broke, and then it kind of went away, and then because there's so much in the news now. So it was great to see a more in-depth look. So for those who want to watch Selling Lies or just learn more about you and your other documentaries, where should they look to find that information?
So we have a website called sellingliesdoc.com. So it's sellingliesdoc.com. And that will steer you to where you can download it, where you can rent it. We are unveiling the film, premiering the film across multiple streaming networks on October 9th, Friday, October 9th, and on Apple, iTunes, on Amazon, on Google Play, on Vimeo On Demand. And then we're also rolling it out in virtual cinema across the country with various theaters, independent theaters. So when our goal is to support the independent theaters and work with them on showing this film and try to raise awareness on this issue. So we're thrilled to be putting the film out now and with some updates, you know, with what's going on today. And so it's 30 minutes, and we just hope that enough people will see it. And maybe, you know, it'll make you think about what you read in a different way, at the very least.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Selling Lies comes out October 9th. So everybody make sure that you stream it, download it, watch it, take it in. It's a great documentary. And Leslie, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you. And check it out on Shorts TV too. Shorts TV is our partner, and they've got channels all over the world. And so they're going to be growing it as we, you know, expanding the platforms as well going forward. So that's another great outlet.
Excellent. So we'll look at Shorts TV as well, and definitely be watching Selling Lies on October 9th. Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thank you all. Great to see you again.
Good to see you. Wow, what a great interview. Another great interview, I should say, with filmmaker Leslie Iwerks. It's always a treat to talk to her. Jay, I know this is your first time speaking to her. What was your thoughts on the interview?
She's very, very intelligent and well-spoken, and I could listen to her for much longer than we were able to.
But I agree. Leslie is, you can tell she's a really intelligent person and really thoughtful in her approach. So, you know, I too try to be unbiased in my reporting, but part of me felt good to hear her say, like, poor journalists, at least those that are trying for the truth. Obviously, those are out there, just like those teens in Macedonia that are just spinning it or putting their twists on it or just being flat out fake. So those we have to learn to try to figure out that they're not accurate, so which is a challenge for all of us, probably for the foreseeable future, I would think. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very, very complex topic, fake news, trying to discern it from real news when the narrative out there is that real news is fake news. And it's a lot. And we do, I think she made a good point that we need to be more responsible readers of news, interpreters of news, and we need to get out of our feelings a little bit when we're reading news and just try to realize what the news is and have informed opinions on things.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Get out of our feelings. Yeah, I think that's so perfect, because that's exactly what you have to do when you decide to say, you know what, let me look that up. Let me just not write it off or say, oh, that's not true. Let me go take the time to really see if what's being reported is accurate and evidence-based, and not just, you know, let it go because I maybe don't like it. So I think that's And I will try to get out of my feelings on most everything else that applies in my life. I want chocolate cake, getting out of my feelings. So.
That does sound a little too macho, like get out of your feelings, kid. Like, but it is, right? Just to try and have, like she said, just look at all the facts, try to put the pieces together, then make your opinion. Don't have an opinion and go, this is how I'm interpreting it. And she goes after social media pretty good on that, you know, in our discussion. And
yeah,
I think that's part of it. You know, when we see other people so fully behind our biases that they just build them up even stronger as opposed to getting us away from those so we can make clear, intelligible interpretations of news.
Yeah. It's a lot. We could probably talk about this in our own podcast series on fake news, but I don't know that I have the emotional stamina to do that. So we'll just say for you listeners who are wanting to do that, we're just going to send you over to Selling Lies by Leslie Iwerks. It's going to be streaming October 9th. You can find it on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Vimeo on demand, and you can check it out on Shorts TV. It's definitely one to check out. It's only about 30 minutes too, so it's not a terribly long film, but there's a lot in there that makes it worth viewing. So, Jay, any final thoughts on the film or the interview?
No, I'm just glad we had the opportunity.
Yeah, but, me too.
Yeah.
And as they say in Macedonia, fala, that means thank you. So
yeah,
fala.
Fala.
I know that. don't ask me to say anything else. That's all I know. Fala. So,
yeah, we didn't mention in the interview that Vanessa is an expert on the geopolitics of North Macedonia. So.
Nope, that's not accurate. That's not. I can say thank you and bread and cheese, which is really all you need to know when you're going to Macedonia, Leb, which is bread and cheese. So, you know, that is all you need to know and thank you. That'll get you through Macedonia. Just don't read any of their news, or at least the fake ones.
That's called living right there.
That's living.
Well, you can find the Front Row Network on Facebook, and you can subscribe to our main feed on Spotify or whatever you use to access your podcast. We can also be found on the NPR Illinois website under the Community Voices tab. You can also follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. Also, you can find our Patreon on the Front Row Network's Facebook page. So if you enjoyed this content, there's absolutely more like it and more available if you want to join us as a full-time patron. Once again, thanks for joining us on this wonderful interview. I'm Jay Hoffman.
And I'm Vanessa Ferguson.
And we will see you all in the front row.